Hello everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the MEM podcast. I'm Demi Wright, and if you haven't already, don't forget to join us on Instagram at mem.cast for a weekly question of the week. This week we have Dr. Pooja Chaniara, who's one of the anaesthetic registrars in the East Midlands. Hi Pooja.
Oh, hi.
Thanks for joining us. So today we're going to be talking about central line. So it is one of the core procedures in IMT, and also once you become a medical registrar to be able to be competent in performing. So it's a pretty important topic for medics to be aware of and to be able to do properly and safely. So Pooja, why don't we start? This is going to seem like a basic question, but what is a central line?
So a central line is a form of intravenous access, which is inserted directly into your large central veins, hence the term the central line. It's a very common, as you mentioned, invasive procedure.
Yeah.
And normally we do more than 200,000 per year.
Wow.
In the UK.
Okay. Are there different types?
So the way to think about it is mainly central lines are categorized into two. So one is the central catheters, and that can be your central lines, your Butterkatz, Hickman lines, your Vascatz, so all those. And then it's peripherally inserted central lines, and that will be your PICC lines.
Right, okay. And so there are different types. Are there different locations, and does size matter?
Yeah. So the easier way to think about it is your peripheral insertion, so that's your PICC lines.
Yeah.
So to start off with that, you can only insert it into three of the main veins.
Okay.
That is your basilic, your cephalic, or your brachial veins in your both sides of your arms.
Okay. Okay.
So that's where your PICC line would be, and those are your sites. So okay. It's only both arms. When you talk about your other lines, so this is your central lines now,
yeah,
and this includes the whole variety as we said earlier, that can be your internal jugular, your subclavian, or your femoral.
Right.
So these are the three main sites.
Right. Okay. And so are there any difference in the size, or is it just a difference in length?
So depending on your catheter selection is based on, I think it's based individual patient by patient on what you need the catheter for,
yeah,
how long you want it to stay, and what you're going to use it for. But the main thing will be the length. So talking about our standard central lines, you have lengths ranging from 12 centimeters to 30.
Okay.
Okay. And this encompasses all your Vascatz. So your Vascatz lines would be longer.
Yeah.
So that's why it's mainly that. And then depending on the ports is what will give you your different gauges. And that's where it comes on what you're using it for. So if your main need is for hemodialysis, then you would just insert a Vascatz.
Yeah.
If you're talking about your critically ill patients on intensive care unit, and that's why you need multiple lumens to give multiple infusions. But again, it's only short term, just stays for 7 days. That's why you just then go for a central line to start off with.
Right. Okay. And in terms of the ones that we've seen, so I'm currently on intensive care at the moment. In terms of the central lines, the length that I've seen is 16 centimeters. Yeah. I think that's standard.
That's standard. That's what we start with.
For what we use in intensive care. So let's mainly focus on the central lines, because that's what we're going to be needing to be competent in for from a medical point of view. So can you just walk us through the indications for a central line? One of the things that I've grown up or heard about whilst I was in medical school, one of the myths about central lines is that it should be inserted for large, rapid volume resuscitation. Can you just talk us through the indications and what your thoughts are on that?
So the main indications for a central line is, one, you can measure your central venous pressure.
Yeah.
And that's a big debate if you talk to intensivists and medics about what it actually measures. But
yeah,
it gives you a guide of fluid management in a patient.
Okay.
Then it's infusing your irritant drugs. So these are your vasopressors and things which would cause vasoconstriction in your peripheral veins, but
yeah,
obviously that's why we go for central veins.
Yeah.
It's also a method of giving parenteral nutrition, and then you can insert things like your pulmonary artery catheters through your central lines, your pacing wires for hemofiltration, hemodialysis uses. You can also replace volume, yes, and we'll come on to your question later.
Yeah.
It can be as a method of that, or you can use it as a way of giving intravenous chemotherapy. But also at the same time, it's also quite useful in people who have difficult peripheral access.
Right. Okay. So you touched on volume replacement. Just go into in depth about that. So yeah. I know previously people would have said, okay, you need rapid large volume, then they need a central line. What are your thoughts on that?
So we talked about volume replacement. That I appreciate that was your second part of the question. Is when you talk about central line, and it's about the lumen sizes that you have on your central line. Mainly the lumens that range are from 14 gauge to 18 gauge. So that's like your 18 gauge green cannula,
okay.
Your 16 gauge, your gray cannula, and then the 14 gauge is your orange cannula.
Right.
However, if you think about it, it's the length of the central line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 16 centimeters as opposed to the less than 5 centimeters that you see on your actual peripheral cannula.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to infuse volume through that, when you have a longer length, and this is, goes back to our physics equations.
Always physics for the anesthetist.
Yeah. So it's the equation is Hagen-Posay equation. What it talks about is the pressure that you're infusing through and into a vein or an artery and how much you're actually getting in. Length is a determinant for, again, reducing your flow
mm-hmm.
in that vessel. So if you have a longer length, yes, you're having flow, but it is reduced.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the same flow going through a peripheral cannula of the same gauge, but with a shorter length.
Yeah.
Therefore, yes, you can infuse large amounts through the central line, but if you're trying to rapidly, and that's the word, rapidly resuscitate somebody, the more better use would be a peripheral cannula with
yeah.
the same gauge, where you're able to infuse large volumes rapidly.
Okay.
Or you could insert something called a pulmonary sheath. So when we introduce pulmonary artery catheters,
mm-hmm.
we introduce a sheath, which is 8 centimeters,
okay.
which would again go into the central line. Similar process, but if you infuse volumes of fluid through that, it's rapid.
Right.
It'll resuscitate your patient.
Right.
So that's why, as anesthetists and intensivists, if we want to rapidly resuscitate somebody, you'd prefer a peripheral cannula
yeah.
or the sheets because it's a shorter length.
Right.
So you can infuse large volumes
okay.
quickly
yeah.
and you have a greater flow
yeah.
as opposed to the central line, which is longer.
Yeah.
Therefore, you will have flow, but it's reduced
yeah.
due to the length.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. So when we talk about any procedure, we also have to talk about the contraindication. So is there any mental safety checklist that you go through prior to doing a central line?
So with a central line, one thing to know is there's no absolute contraindications.
Yeah.
As it could be a life-saving procedure.
Okay.
So therefore, however, there are serious complications that can occur. So you just have to check. There's no safety checklist, but there's a few questions that you can ask
yeah.
to guide you whether this is going to be an easy procedure or a difficult procedure. So it's mainly looking at your patient. So if your surface landmarks are difficult to identify,
yeah.
so we're talking about a short neck or obese patient,
yeah.
you know that that's going to be a difficult procedure.
Okay.
Also in your patient, if there are limited sites for access, so if you're struggling to try and see where you're going to place your vascular, then you know already that you've got limited tries, limited attempts.
Okay.
If they've had previous complications or previous difficulties in inserting a central line, that you know that's going to be likely in the same second amount. Or if there's any vascular abnormality
yeah.
or coagulopathy,
yeah.
which is uncorrected.
Yeah.
And we can come on to that in a minute. But,
yeah.
So these are the kind of things. Or if there's an awake patient who can't lie supine.
Yeah.
So these are things about difficulty inserting or difficulty performing the procedure
yeah.
that will highlight or cause a red flag in your head that this is going to be a difficult procedure.
Right. Okay. So I like that you mentioned the coagulopathy in terms of, you know, not necessarily a contraindication, because from a medical point of view, we're pretty strict on saying, okay, if the INR is 1.5 or above, or if the platelets are, you know, less than 100, we need to kind of be a bit wary. But I'm on ITU at the moment and they don't seem bothered at all. Like, you'll have people on dual antiplatelets, they'll be on therapeutic, whatever, and they're just like, "What? Why are you asking me this question? Like, they need it, just do it."
So as we were saying earlier, sometimes because you need it for access and you need it to resuscitate your patient, you've got no option but to perform it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. But you're right. The guidelines do state that if it's, so again, it's a patient by patient. But if the INI is greater than 1.8, there's a new guidelines, or your APTT is 3 times the normal,
okay,
or there's coagulopathy, then it's worth considering whether you need to reverse it. And the second question is whether you have the time to reverse it.
Mm.
So why do they need that access and what do they need it for? Mm. And sorry, the third number is platelets less than 50.
Yeah.
If there is time, people have given some cover or reversed the coagulopathy.
Yeah.
But in most of the cases, you don't have time to do that.
Yeah.
Therefore, you just go ahead and perform it. And ultrasound has made things a lot safer.
Yeah,
which is why people are getting a little bit more, I think the maybe the word is braver, and not reversing these coagulopathies before.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's say you have an awake patient, and you did mention that you do have potential complications associated with the procedure. What would you normally consent patients for?
So normally, just to give a ballpark figure, there are 10% complications associated with all central lines that we perform.
Okay.
So to start off with, we can divide it. So it's all mechanical. So with performing the, so it's just infection.
Yeah.
And that could be early on or later on if you haven't performed it aseptically or in a rush.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's bleeding. It's regardless of whether it's on the inside or afterwards, whether it's erode, the catheter can erode through the vessels. So you could have complications later on. The other complications are injury. And by this, I mean your iatrogenic injury to surrounding structures. So that's your artery, your lungs, or pneumothorax. And then you have your thoracic duct. We talk about it less, but I've seen that people can get chylothoraxes and things. And then last but not least, if you've injured your artery, you can go into diagnosis of cardiac tamponade, massive pneumothorax. Yeah. Pneumothorax. And then there's also complications of long-term thromboembolic phenomenon. So you can thrombose that vessel.
Yeah.
Depending on how long your central line's been in there.
Yeah. Okay. And just one of the things I've actually experienced a few times whilst doing the procedure myself is arrhythmias, particularly during insertion of the catheter. And it's one thing that you need to actively look out for whilst you're inserting it, particularly with the guide wire being in too far. And I have one instance in particular where I was doing a central line by myself. So note to everyone listening, always have help. Yeah. I was doing this one by myself with no one around. The patient went into SVT, pull the guide wire back a bit, still SVT, pull it back, still SVT, pull it out, still SVT. So I'm like, help. So I'm like, someone bring a syringe, get the guy to blow down on the syringe. And luckily, you know, my ALS algorithm was like coming to me, and it actually works with him, you know, the vagal maneuvers. So that worked well. But the moral of the story is always have someone to help you and don't be there by yourself like me. So I'll never do that again. So can you walk us through the procedure briefly?
Yeah, so the first thing I was going to say is absolutely, it's have an assistant.
Yeah.
Is definitely required. You know that the basic preparation is make sure you know your kit.
Yeah.
You've got it seems silly, but have a separate trolley so you can arrange everything on it. Then your patient must be monitored, and that's exactly why, because you can have complications such as arrhythmias when you're inserting your guide wire.
Yeah.
There's continuous ECG monitoring, your oxygen sats and blood pressure. And then essentially, the equipment is you make sure that they're on a trolley or a tiltable bed so you can have them head down as much as able. And then sterile techniques, all the equipment you need for that, hat, gown, mask, obviously your cleaning solution, so your chlorhexidine sticks or solution, local anesthetic if it's an awake patient, your saline flushes, and then obviously make sure you've got your kit, checked your kit, flushed your kit, you've got connections for all your bungs. Sutures for afterwards, dressings, and then also for your ultrasound machine, make sure you've got it and the covers. So just a quick walkthrough of the technique, and I'm sure you're all aware of it. We all use Seldinger technique now, and we recommend using the ultrasound. landmark technique has gone out the window. Again, this is more because there were papers and lots of research studies done where it shows landmark technique complications are higher.
Okay.
Ultrasound has reduced it from 10% to 1%.
Okay.
Therefore, it's a safety netting as well.
Yeah.
Using your ultrasound scan, identify your vein.
Yeah.
Make sure it's definite. You can sometimes use Doppler on to ensure, sometimes in difficult patients, you don't know what is the artery.
Yeah.
But normally your vein is lateral to your artery. Once you've got that, then using your needle and with a syringe attached to it, old people will recommend no syringe or a syringe full of air, but that can sometimes cause injury. You can inadvertently inject air, which you don't want, which is I'd recommend having a syringe of saline.
Yeah.
Once you inject into your vein, make sure you're aspirating
mm-hmm.
at all times. Once you've got free aspiration, that's when you put in your guide wire, and then over your guide wire your dilator,
yeah,
then your line. Ensure you're able to aspirate and flush all ports, and then fix it and suture it in.
Right, okay. And of course, always holding on to your guide wire. And what about post procedure? Is there things that you routinely do post procedure?
So post procedure, you've just got to make sure, again, people in intensive care are really worried about infection, and it's quite serious when it does happen. Therefore, ensure your area is clean before you secure the dressing. And then once you've done it, you attach it and you transduce it. Sometimes if you're not sure, before you fix it, you can always take a gas to ensure that whether it's venous or arterial.
Yeah.
Post-procedure, ensure that you've got your chest x-ray ordered because you want to check the position before you start using it and ensure that you've not caused any iatrogenic pneumothoraces.
Right. And one thing I should have asked, in terms of location, what's your go-to location in terms of internal jugular, right, left, subclavian? What's the normal hierarchy of where you like to go?
So I think as we learn, all of us learn on your internal jugular, and most of the time, right-sided. And again, the reason we go for right-sided is more to do with your anatomy of the veins.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an easier way for the catheter to sit and approach. Left-sided is possible, but it's more at an angle, so sometimes it can be a little bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, it's not a contraindication. You mm-hmm. can do either side. Mostly we'll prefer your right internal jugular and then subclavian.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, yes, there is femoral,
mm-hmm.
but then with femoral sites, there is increased risk of infection.
Mm-hmm.
So again, why you've got to be sure about why you're needing it.
Yeah.
Because if you're needing it for your CVP monitoring, then central is not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And also if you're using or inserting lines for hemodialysis, we normally say leave the right-sided free, so you can put a central line, say, for example, on the left, but put the VASCAT on the right. The only, again, the reason being there's a straighter approach, because if there is a bend on the VASCAT, they can obstruct, and again, you'll have lots of problems with your hemodialysis circuit blocking intermittently. Therefore, we prefer that straighter route.
Right. Okay. So in terms of the central pressure monitoring, so the CVP monitoring, what's the normal reference range?
So the normal range is from 8 to 12 millimeters per mercury. Having said that, again, this is the debate that I was referring to earlier, whether we use it to guide fluid management. So it's an ongoing debate.
Yeah.
However, the idea for central venous pressure is that you're estimating that it's the same pressure as your right atrium.
Yeah.
And hence your right ventricular end diastolic pressure.
Yeah.
So it's all an assumption based that your tricuspid valve is working normally.
Yeah.
However, it's very difficult in patients. So this is easy in an ideal situation or a patient with no problems.
Yeah.
But in patients with conditions like heart failure or any sort of COPD, all these can cause effects on your central venous pressure.
Yeah.
So old school thinking where it guided fluid management has sort of gone out the window.
Okay.
It is part of your assessment,
mm-hmm.
and it is a useful assessment, but I wouldn't be guided solely by it.
Right. Fine. Fair enough. Okay. Well, that was extremely helpful. Thank you so much, Pooja, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope that was okay.
Yeah, no, definitely. And for those who haven't already, don't forget to join us on Instagram at mem.cast. And if you do have any special requests, please do get in touch. See you next time.